WPCA.
Jingle bells, jingle bells. You know, I do live for the end of the year when the chill in the air is numbing, when every breath you take, I'm sting now, when every breath is harsh and biting, and the thrill of stepping out on an icy, unsalted sidewalk sends shivers down the spine of even the most diehard stuntman. And of course, I live for the Christmas holidays. The air and feel of Christmas is indelibly etched into my very soul, and has since been dutifully passed down to my offspring. It's a time of tradition, reverence, family, and more than anything, of love. Okay, it is a time of receiving as well, but that's a given. We'll just skip over that. When it comes to Christmas in the Northeast, most people picture scenes from the movies It's a Wonderful Life, Holiday Inn. Even though they're black and white, they still had nice white snowbanks, and White Christmas, with those beautiful cottony snowbanks lining every path, a perpetual snow falling from the sky, and icicles dangling precariously from the rafters of houses, reflecting the light from streetlights, making them into their own natural and unique Christmas lights. The sad truth of the matter, though, is that these images are far removed from the Norman Rockwell painting most people think of. My most vivid memory of the Northeast and Christmas is of the snow. As it fell, it was silent outside, disrupted only by the occasional clanging of snow chains on the tires of an old Chevy rumbling down the street. Now, the snow was beautiful, but it was deadly at the same time for school children all around the tri-state area. Countless kids from within the tri-state area would come as close as they ever would to death as they nervously, frantically, and hysterically waited by the radio to hear if their school was closed because of the snow. The announcer would start reading the listing around 5 a.m. We had to leave by 7:30 so we could get to school on time. Would ours be one of the fortunate ones to be closed? The announcer rustled the papers over the airwaves, making them sound like a crackling fire, and then he began reading.
The following schools will be closed today. St. Mary's, St. Paul's, St. Lucas.
Apparently, the Catholic schools had inside information that we, in the public sector, were not privy to. The announcer droned on and on.
St. Patrick, St. Pius, St. Manuel.
Before we knew it, the time to leave was nearing. The announcer's monotonous voice continued.
St. Cloud, St. George.
It was now 7:25. I inched closer and closer to the door, slowly putting one boot on at a time.
St. Pius the 98th, St. Pius the 99th.
It was now 7:29. The adrenaline was coursing through my veins as I awaited the inevitable. My palms were sweaty. My heart was racing. Come on, man! Say the magic words! My hand trembled as it latched onto the doorknob when the announcer paused for what seemed like an eternity. The clock struck 7:30, and then the voice crackled over the air.
Mahwah Public School System!
You could actually hear the thud of hundreds of kids hitting the floor, echoing up and down the street, passing out from the sheer exhaustion brought on by the anxiety. All right, now then, once the schedule has been cleared for the day, it was time to go and frolic in the snow. Which seems a bit ludicrous now, since you can't go to school in the snow, but you can spend the day playing in it. But rules are rules, and are meant to be adhered to. The tradition of a holiday snow day says that it is customary for children who have been granted a reprieve from the school commissioner to eat the newly fallen snow. Now, there's a very narrow window of opportunity to do this in the Northeast. You have about 3 hours to get in your snow feast before the white snow is glazed over with a gray tint from car exhaust. They don't show you that in the movies like White Christmas and Holiday Inn now, do they? No. Well, invariably, just before Christmas, the snow would start to melt. Slush might be great from a 7-Eleven convenience store, but on the ground, that's another story. The town would be gray and dirty looking from the combination of melted, sooty snow and the sand and salt the road department used to keep the road clear. To this day, the scene makes me feel all yee, as gritty as a sandwich eaten at the beach. Well, this one particular year saw not only a snowstorm, but the worst ice storm the region had seen in 30 years. The entire city was blanketed with at least a half inch of ice. Nothing could move with the exception of the intrepid kids of the Mahwah Public School System, who were presented with a rare opportunity to make history, to attempt to break the world land speed record for sledding. Oh, the wind was howling outside. You could just hear it out there, howling. But the kids came in droves, hundreds of them, thousands of them, coming to see the world speed record for sledding be broken on this day. Ken came with his plastic snow saucer, Greg with an old cardboard box that once housed a refrigerator, and me, I had my flexible flyer. If anyone could break the record, it would be me and Old Flex. It was actually an American Flyer model built by Flexible Flyer in Canada. It was made of the finest northern hardwoods and had multiple ribs that created the deck you held onto as you sped down the slopes. It had reinforced knee areas for comfort, and the coup de grace, a special powder-coated set of runners that, as the ad in Boys Life magazine said, sliced through even the smallest amount of snow. But the line of people, mostly from our gang, started up the hill. It was a long and arduous trek. We would take one step up and slide back three because of the ice. Denise and our friend Janice were obviously concerned as Denise turned around to me and said, "Don't you think this is a bit dangerous, Jake?" "Nonsense," I said. "Flex and I are certified ridge runners. We're thrill seekers." "You're loonies," she shot back. Well, the course that we were to use climbed a cleared stretch of land known as a power line, where, coincidentally enough, an electric power line stretched down the hillside. This line went up the side of Hoovenkopf Mountain, a foothill to the Appalachians that wasn't too big or too small. It was just right for record-breaking. So we climbed and we climbed, and we slid back, and we climbed until we reached the top of the mountain and the end of the power line. We were at least 700 feet up in the air. In the distance, you could see my house and the road that ran in front of it. You could see the town with smoke rising from all the chimneys below, like a little village out in England somewhere. And you could see the bottom of the power line far below. Ken was the first to go. God love him. He was going to go with his plastic saucer. He deftly placed the plastic disc on the hillside, placed one foot securely behind him, the other firmly on the disc. Pushing off with the anchor foot, the saucer flew out from underneath him, careening down the slope while his passenger upended and landed with a thud on his back. Well, next up was Greg. The crowd that was beginning to gather murmured and talked amongst themselves about his chances and strategized what his game plan would be.
Straight down the chute, best way.
Oh, keep the weight back. Keep it back.
Greg seemed oblivious to the armchair quarterbacks as he latched onto the sides of the box with both hands and flung himself onto the ancient bobsled, propelling himself down the hill. A polite gallery applause came from the spectators as Greg departed the starting gate. And down he went, increasing speed. Trees whizzed past his face. But the friction from the high speed was causing the ice to melt beneath the box. It saturated the flimsy rig, and upon hitting the first mogul, ripped in half, sailing Greg off the course and into a snowbank. He had only made it about 200 feet down the hill. The paramedics, in this case that would be Denise and Janice, with a bottle of Coke each, rushed to the scene, but Greg was fine. He jumped up and gave a hefty two thumbs up to the ever-growing crowd. Now is my turn. The gang turned away, afraid to watch what they thought would be the end of good old Jake. But I had a different feeling. I was going to make history. I don't remember the sound of the crowd, but Ken told me they began a rhythmic chanting.
Jake,
crescendoed into a deafening roar. I was only intent on the run. I tucked the tow rope of the Flexible Flyer neatly onto the pilot's deck so it wouldn't tangle under the runners. Slowly, I leaned over and grabbed each side of the deck. Like a world-class bobsledder, I rocked the sled forward and backward in the starting gate, concentrating on my goal, the bottom of the 700-foot hill. I pushed it forward once. I pushed it forward twice. Then, on the third thrust forward, I ran with all my might and hopped onto the deck of Flex. Quickly, I grabbed onto the control horn with both hands, and down I went. Well, the exact speeds that I reached are still debated to this day, but to me, I felt like I was on the verge of blacking out. The sound of trees whizzing by my head was one constant rush of air. My heart was racing. My eyes were watering from the sting of the icy winter air, pelting them relentlessly. I managed to squint through the tears just enough to see that I was nearing the end marker, a huge tree, oak tree no less, directly in the middle of the run at the bottom of the hill. With the dexterity of an astronaut with 30 G's pounding their body during a liftoff, I managed to turn the sled in plenty of time to miss the tree and come to the end of the run. Only one problem. The run wasn't over. This wasn't just a snow run we were doing. This was an ice storm run. My speed continued to increase as I continued down yet another hill. I was going much too fast to just jump off. That would be suicide. Crazy. Insane. Thinking quickly, I lowered my feet, which were dangling from the back of the sled, so I could use my toes as a brake. But the speed and friction ripped my boots off. Flex and I continued to careen down the hill to a certain date with our maker. I hit a large bump which almost knocked the wind out of me, and I realized that I was now traveling down Main Street and heading towards my house. that sat at the end of a cul-de-sac in the end of the road, I was doomed. Parked cars along the side of the road became streaks of color passing by my face. It was then that I noticed that a sand truck had just entered the road before me and was throwing sand onto the road to melt the ice. This was my last best hope. I turned the sled at a 90-degree angle to the truck and managed to maneuver it behind the plume of sand being thrown from the chute. Flex hit the sand and came to a screeching halt. I, on the other hand, sailed 30 feet through the air and crash-landed into a row of garbage cans. The ride lasted an unbelievable 10 minutes, the resulting hospital stay a remarkably short week.
A-caroling, a-caroling, a-caroling we go, hearts filled with music and cheeks aglow. From house to house we bring the message of the King again. Peace on earth, goodwill to men. Peace on earth.
Well, before you could say Jack Frost nipping at your nose, it was Christmas Eve, and once again, it was freezing cold outside. The sun began to set, and my family turned on the Christmas lights. The bulbs on the outside of the house were humongous jobbers, almost like 60-watt bulbs each, not like these little dinky bulbs today. They were bright enough to light the front sidewalk, half the street. Heck, you can almost heat your entire house with these things. Inside, the tree was ablaze with color, including a rotating colored disc that accentuated the lights already on the tree. It was a plastic plate with translucent red, blue, white, and green painted colors on it. The plate rotated in front of a spotlight bulb, which threw a psychedelic pattern into the already color-drenched tree. Well, my sisters and I would gather around the television at about 8 p.m., that's 7 p.m. Central Time. It was a big night because tonight, the most popular Christmas shows of the day would be shown on this very night. And it all began with the Andy Williams Christmas Special.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
And his special guest was that black bear. Danced around. Not Blacktooth or White Fang, that's Soupy Sales. This other black bear. Anyway, following that would be the King Family Christmas Special with special guest Alvino Ray and his talking guitar. Now, I don't know about the rest of the world, but I could do without the family. Just bring on the younger King member, Tina Cole. She was the stuff dreams were made of for boys my age. Then came the classic Rankin and Bass, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, a masterful piece of television if ever there was one. The songs, the animated figures, the Norelco Santa Claus commercials with Santa gliding down a snowy hill on a triple-head Norelco electric shaver that was so seamlessly blended you believe that it was a scene right from the show. But by now it was getting late. My mother, God love her, packed a small 3-foot by 4-foot coffee table with every imaginable confection you could possibly think of. There were sugar cookies, peanut butter cookies, spice cookies, divinity, chocolate and peanut butter fudge, bowls full of white and red peppermints, milk chocolate footballs. Not an inch of table could be seen, and it groaned under the enormous weight. All of this was for Santa, and the old boy deserved it. I limped up the stairs, still hobbling from the Speed Racer episode on Flex a week or so earlier, and curled up in bed. Outside my window was a streetlight. I stared at it, fading in and out of that twilight zone just before sleep, dreaming about the bajillion some assembly-required toys I would be receiving the next morning. As I caught myself dozing, I would focus on the lamp again, and there, silhouetted in the yellowish light, you could see something float by, and then another. And before you knew it, it looked like a giant pillow fight going on outside the window. It was snowy again, and again everything was silent as it fell, accumulating deeper and deeper. But tonight, on this night, it was right and perfect.